All right, we're going to head over to the Zoom studio, minus my picture as I'm pulled over on the side of the road. Didn't quite make it back to the studio in time. So, Mr. Tom Shepstone, thank you for joining us here today. That's whose picture you folks are seeing up there. And for those of you in Radio Land, pictures available at our website. So, how are you doing today?
Ah, great. It's always great to talk to you, Jason. We always have like minds on many issues. So.
Well, let's get to the lead story. Now, you're out in Pennsylvania. How far away were you from the President Trump rally that made it worldwide news?
Well, on the other side of the state, I'm in the far northeastern corner, and Butler is, it's not exactly in the southwest corner, but it's on the western border of Pennsylvania, slightly above Pittsburgh. So I've been there a few times, and it's a relatively rural area, fairly conservative, significant amount of oil and gas, and so on. It's what I would call a very typical Pennsylvania ex-urban environment, if you will.
Is there anything new coming out of the state that, boots on the ground that you're hearing about, or is it pretty much what you hear in the news is pretty much what you hear?
In terms of the oil and gas, or in terms of the
in terms of the Trump thing, I was just as you're in the state,
absolutely.
I thought, hey, what kind of rumor mill can we get going here?
Well, the only not really in terms of the assassination attempt. I have very strong feelings on that. There's something just incredibly wrong with the whole thing. I mean, I don't know how you can have that much incompetence in a in the Secret Service. And, I've told several people this, and I'll tell you on this radio program, I'm 73 years old. I lived at least, I would say, 63 years of those years. Not imagining, of course, I think I was about 12 when the Kennedy assassination happened. And the so I guess it's really like 51 years. I've lived 51 years of my life post-Kennedy assassination, supposing that the Warren Commission report was, if not perfect, was close to the truth. And I've since become very educated, I guess, in how our government really works. I think that's the magnificent thing Trump has done, whether he intended to or not. Is by the visceral reaction other people have had to him. He has exposed the rot in our government that has existed for a long time. And I now believe there's significant reason to suppose that our FBI or CIA or a combination thereof was involved in Kennedy's assassination. So I'm very skeptical as to their involvement in this one. At one point,
you look at the theme, the theme is basically that you cannot have that many fail safes fail.
That's
correct. And so when you see it, it brings you back to basically every conspiracy that's been around since the Kennedy assassination, because now with all the phones and the cameras and everything, you're seeing the crowd now, and you're seeing the, people saying shooters on the roof. And for me, what my takeaway is, in all honesty, and this is kind of controversial and it's not meant to be, but that the older I get, I'm not even 50, I'm 49. I turned 50 this year. Mm-hmm. And I've been working since I was 8 years old, because we just had to. If I didn't want to wear secondhand clothes from a garage sale, I had to go and get a job. And back then I was mowing lawns, and I was a paper boy. And a paper boy is a full-time job, 7 days a week. You got to collect that night and have the papers delivered by 6:30 in the morning. There's not a job that's difficult today in the market out there, by the way.
So, yeah, right.
Anyway, what I've learned is that the older I get, the more I truly respect the Constitution. And I'll admit, I used to roll my eyes at it in the 20s because, Constitution, this and that. But the more I age and the more wisdom I get, the more I see how discrimination is very easy and very subjective. The more I see how you can call a police officer to your house and they can shoot you accidentally, and you can have a president almost get assassinated. So when I take a look at all the different amendments they really have context for me. And that's my biggest takeaway, is that when you have that many fail safes fail, and you have local PD, county PD, statewide PD, Secret Service, FBI, I'm not sure if there's a constable there or not, but when you have that many people that have taken an oath to a constitution, you should not have that many fail safes fail, because that's my, what bothers me, is that someone died who's a fireman who got shot. And a fireman, by the way, 70% of our firefighters are volunteer, and that's a basic service. You know, I'm a libertarian, and I'd be the first one to fund a firefighter. You know what I mean? Before giving it to Bill Gates for some nonprofit he started. So anyway, to me, that was my biggest takeaway, was that if we're going to talk about some of this, you know, the thin blue line and the boys in blue, I would like all the boys in blue to, you know, remember they took an oath to a constitution. And if they're in the military, they also took an oath to a constitution there. Mm-hmm. And we should not have that many fail safes fail, because it breaks the public trust.
Yeah.
And that and like I said, it's not the most popular opinion, but that was my takeaway. And the other takeaway, and this is the transition into energy, mm-hmm. is that Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, he had COVID, got COVID, got sick. So he backed out of the, he's backing out of the next election. And Kamala Harris is now the supposed nominee, which I'm not sure if she's going to be, but that's irrelevant to where I'm going with this.
Right.
We are literally one sneeze or one flight of stairs away from Kamala Harris being the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And she is now saying she's going to ban fracking. And she's talking about how she wants to depopulate the planet, like openly, like that's part of her campaign.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how anybody can connect with that, but that's me. That, you know, I'm all about saving people from energy poverty, and I'm not really into depopulating the planet. I'm not really into those types of things.
Right.
But if it's a presidential campaign, there must be an audience out there. So talk to me about Kamala Harris and what your thoughts are on her. You're 73 years old. I just mentioned two radical things that are apparently mainstream now.
Well, I think she's a communist. I you know, she's clearly a Marxist in her philosophy. And, you know, I used to be embarrassed to throw around the word communist because it sounded like we were going back to the early 50s. But, you know, a lot of that was true. If you read any of the literature on that, you realize a lot of that was very true. And, of course, the whole Alger Hiss thing and all that. What we see, I think, is, and let's use our Alger Hiss as an example. Probably some of your listeners won't even know that name, but he was the fellow who turned, and history proved that he was in fact a spy for the Soviets, and he came from the very best people. Okay, he was part of the gentry class, if you will, the aristocrats in Washington, and he was exposed by Whitaker Chambers in an outstanding book called Witness. And the controversy went on for 50 or 60 years. I mean, he was exposed by Chambers, who had also been a communist. And he told the whole story, and nobody believed Chambers because he came from the wrong side of the tracks, even though he was a brilliant writer and so on and so forth. His autobiography, Witness, is just one of the great books of all time. But in any case, what we see today is similar. We're seeing a gentry class, an aristocratic class of people who really want control. They can't stand the ordinary person. They want to control the common man and woman. And that's part of human nature. You know, part of human nature is that we seek power over others. We all do it. And unfortunately, what happens when you get too big, too wealthy, whatever, you have the means to actually do it. And so That's the situation we're in. She is a not very smart, obviously. I mean, some of the stuff she says is just worse than Biden in terms of its coherence. And she's her career has been, basically building power, seeking power. And she's desperate for it now. She wants to be president so she can exercise power. Her thoughts, the depopulation thing is such a complete lie. The thing that is threatening our civilization as a world civilization. I'm not talking about Western civilization. The thing that's threatening us as a world right now is depopulation. It's demographic implosion. Even China. I had to explain this to some liberal friends several months ago, who started to, we were sitting around a table talking about some things, and one of the younger women mentioned, well, we have the population problem. I said, there is no population problem. The problem is we don't have enough people. We don't have enough people to work. We have nobody to take care of us when we get old. We are facing absolute implosion. And there are very few countries in the world who are keeping up enough to sustain their population. Most are losing population and will literally go out of business. Japan being a great example. China, if you go back 30, 40 years, everybody was talking about, oh, China, they're going to have 1 billion people pretty soon. It's terrible. They're standing side by side, no room to move, blah, 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 blah. None of that turned out to be true. China, went on their one-child policy, which was an utter disaster. And the result is they are losing power. China is going to be shrinking. They're going to be shrinking big time. And they're out of balance in terms of men and women now, too, which is not a good situation. You don't want a population that's more men than women, believe me. So China's got a huge population problem, and it's not overpopulation, it's underpopulation. So Kamala Harris, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. There's so many different ways to pronounce it, but let's just say Kami the Kami or Kami the Kami. She represents that view. She represents this view. We need control. We've got to keep people in line. We want the government to take care of your health care, to control the food supply, decide whether or not you can have children, decide where you can live. She wants that kind of power because that kind of power gives you unimaginable ego boost. Okay, so that's who she is. She wants that ego boost that comes from exercising power, and she's a very, very, very dangerous person.
One of the ways that she can obtain the power is through ESG, environmental social governance.
Yes.
And over the past year, ESG has really taken off in Europe. It's really taken off in Australia, New Zealand, to where in New Zealand, they're actually doing away with home ownership so that you'll just rent the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it's done through the banking system. So as much as America can try to resist it, if it goes through banking and insurance, that's going to be very difficult to avoid.
Yes.
And ESG is very scary because it's platitudes over realities, and it is a control mechanism. So, what is your thoughts on where we're at with ESG? What do you want people that, you're 73, you've been doing this a long time, you got some wisdom, tell us, let's just talk ESG for a second. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think ESG is a complete fraud, just like DEI. They're both schemes to try to herd people into different lanes, like you're loading cattle on a truck. That's what they're both about, is herding everybody around. And I think if you look at the DEI in particular, which is virtually the same thing, the ESG is targeted a little bit more to the financial thing, as you say, the insurance and banking and all that. But they're the same principles at play. And if you look at the DEI, as a matter of fact, Kamala Harris has been referred to, and I think quite properly, as the DEI vice president. That's who she is. She was chosen because of the color of her skin and because she was a woman. And I have no qualms about saying that. And because it's true, you know, she was the last person that should have been put in as vice president by Biden, because first of all, she called him a racist, if you remember, in the campaign in 2020, and she was the first to exit the race. She never even got to any of the debates. She was that bad. So, but she got nonetheless the nod because she filled a identity quota, and people are rejecting that everywhere. I'm sure you've noticed. I mean, major companies now are saying, John Deere being a perfect example, farms, also, what's it called? Supply, a farm supply, the
Farm and Tractor Supply,
tractor
yeah.
supply, farm and tractor supply. A Tractor Supply really came out with quite a statement. I mean, I was shocked at how blunt they were. Like, hey, we made a huge mistake. We're sorry. We'll never do this again. This was absolutely, it was phenomenal. I mean, I want to go shop there now, you know. So,
I actually read that article and I thought the same thing. I thought, good for them. Good for them. They
yeah.
came out really just anti-Disney, the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and look, if you're an investor in Disney, you're not very happy, you know, because their stock has gone way down. So the DEI thing is doing the DIE thing, I think, and I think that will happen at the ESG as well. It's going to take longer, I think, because the results in that case will depend upon financial performance. And in the meantime, and that takes years sometimes to reveal itself. I mean, people will make excuses for the fact that BlackRock isn't doing as well as maybe as it did last year. But they'll get back. They'll do better next year, you know. And Larry Fink can get out there and he can say, "Well, we're not really doing it anymore," even though they are, you know, by playing the three card Monte game. But the bottom line is, you still have to deliver for people. I mean, I don't care how committed you are ideologically, and whether you're big or small, whether the person owns a couple shares of stock or whether the person that owns millions and millions of shares of stock, if that isn't performing, you take action and you react. That's just, again, human nature. And so ESG is anti-human nature. And eventually, I believe that will collapse as well. It's just it cannot continue. They're trying to make it continue by and again, you've done research this and written about this far more than me. But in my humble opinion, it cannot continue. It won't continue because it goes against the human nature factor, which is that when we sock our money away someplace, we want it to earn money for us. We don't want to just we don't want to be ideological with our money. We all say we do, but we don't really. It's like the I do a lot of agricultural consulting, and you know, for many years, a lot of people were saying, "Well, you know, we can now market products, niche products, and you can to some extent. We can market niche products, and we can get people to pay more for them because they're organic carrots or their natural raised chickens, you know, free range chickens, you know, and people will pay a little more for those things, but it's only a few people, first of all, and they'll only pay a little, okay? So, and so there are very real limits to the extent to which people will let their ideology control their money. And so that's what they're trying to do in this case. And they're trying BlackRock, Larry Fink, who I think is one of the very dangerous people in the world. They're trying to hide this all, and they're trying to create, you know, world government where everybody is just forced to do this and there's no choice, and so on and so forth. And at the end of the day, they're hoping to make themselves rich, you know, off this. That's really what it comes down to. They want to make themselves rich, but they don't care whether you get any of the money. So that's my view. Take it for what it's worth.
Well, as you know, we started on the control factor, you know, I mean,
Yeah.
and getting rich and getting control while
Yeah.
doing it. And that's where
Yeah.
people have a problem with that. But the other way of control starts with the letter C, and it's called carbon.
Yeah.
And when you can control somebody's carbon, You control everything, really. And a lot of these ESG scores are a derivative of your carbon footprint and your carbon this and your carbon that. And
right.
Folks, if you want to think if I'm joking, just go on Google and do a airplane. Do it, just plan a vacation. It'll tell you what your carbon footprint is through the airlines. And now they're going to have them on DoorDash and Uber and restaurants pretty soon. So, you know, so you'll order according to your carbon footprint on, you know, DoorDash. It'll first, you know, be a trendy thing, but eventually it'll be for control reasons. But so how about the carbon angle? I mean, Oxy, they're no longer an oil petroleum company. They're no longer an energy company. They're a carbon management company. Mm-hmm. And Liberty Energy or Liberty Oil is no longer Liberty Energy. They're just Liberty.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see, you know, that take over. So what do you make of the carbon industry and the carbon market and the carbon control factor?
One gigantic scam. One gigantic scam. It is. And the people who are changing their focus to do that sort of thing are simply grifting off the government. That's all it is. It's just grifting. And it reminds me when General Electric... Jack Welch used to be the head of General Electric at one time, very successful company. And then it was taken over by another fellow's name I can't recall at the moment, but he decided that the future of General Electric wasn't so much in selling light bulbs or washing machines or turbines or locomotives. It was grifting off the government and helping to handle the paperwork from Obamacare. And you know, he was going to sign this big contract with the Obama administration because he was funneling them money, donations. He was going to get this big contract. And I don't know if he ever got it or not, but the bottom line was, you know, this is what's wrong with our whole world right now, particularly in America, Western civilization. Everybody's throwing money at government officials. The government officials then give them opportunities to profit off the government, which is just pure grifting. And we're seeing that in the carbon world as well. It's all grifting, every bit of it. And I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of fortunes lost on this, because the bottom line is that we don't even know to what extent carbon affects the climate. I mean, the whole idea that there's a climate crisis is silly. Any serious scientist will tell you there's no crisis. Maybe the climate is warming a little bit. But we have no idea whether it's how much of that warming, if it's occurring, but let's assume it is, there's a little bit, we have no idea how much of that is natural and how much relates to carbon. Nobody knows that. And the serious scientists will tell you that we have no clue as to how much is natural and how much might be caused by man. Again, an honest scientist might tell you that there's the potential, possibly, that CO2, carbon, could have an influence on temperature. But we don't know it for certain. We really don't. And there's plenty of evidence to the contrary. And even if you assume it's true, it's a minimal effect, and there's no crisis whatsoever. So you can't go on. You can't perpetuate a scam forever on a fraud. And people are starting to realize this now. You have... Judith Curry is a perfect example. She's a scientist. She thinks there is global warming, a bit of global warming from CO2. I don't think the evidence is as strong as she does, but she's a scientist. I'm not. But what she does say is, and I agree 100% with her, is we have no clue how much that is compared to what the natural effects are, when the natural effects are likely to be much bigger. So anything we do in the way of trying to mitigate carbon, it's going to have absolutely minimal, infinitesimally small impact on the actual climate. So the smart thing to do, if you believe that CO2 is a problem, that carbon is an issue, what you would be doing is not trying to mitigate it. You'd be trying to adapt to it, to the temperature and so on and so forth. And in the process, maybe you'll reduce it a little bit. Big deal, you know. But there's a very powerful argument from Dr. William Happer, for one, and Richard Lindzen, both physicists, one from MIT, the other from Princeton. Those are pretty good qualifications, if you ask me. They've been putting out different reports showing that we need more carbon, not less. We need more. We have historically low CO2. You know, nobody's telling you that in the mainstream press, but we have historically low CO2 compared to, you know, over the centuries. And more CO2 means more plants, more growth, more shade. Okay. So more food. So, you know, all this that's the is gradually coming out, and it has to come out because it's the truth. The truth always comes out in the end, always. And that's what's happening here. So I think the whole carbon thing is a gigantic scam. I see it going nowhere in the end. And I think our children will say, "What the hell were you people thinking?"
Yeah, it makes me wonder when we can't even pinpoint where the carbon comes from, because most of the scientists I've talked to in my life, they all point at the sun for being the number one driver of the planet's temperature. And then land use usually comes second.
Yeah, that's
And
right.
you know as well as I do, land use is a political thing. So all of a sudden now what we have is we have politics involved in science. And just to give everybody, is again, just to show you how much politics has infected us all, because it's messed up the economy, it's messed up science. You can't even tell somebody what your gender is anymore without them disagreeing with you, for crying out loud. I mean, and that's and even saying that statement is political now. Can you imagine such a thing
I
where
know. Well, the
I mean,
problem is,
it's bizarre to me. So talk to me about the politics and the whole deal.
well, the politics is this: the left knows how to intimidate, the right doesn't, and the right generally cowers, and that's the problem with Western civilization. I mean, we the whole idea of the Marxist concept. It actually goes back much further than Marx, but he's the one that actually brought it to the fore in a big way. And of course, every, you know, all the people since him, you know, this idea that this idea that we have to, well, what I want to say here, that we have to overpower everybody is inherent in the communist idea, the leftist perspective. It's about grabbing power. It doesn't mean having any plan for it. The plan is to secure power. And if you've read any of Solzhenitsyn's books, excellent books, and one of his he wrote like a 20 volume a document which is called The Red Wheel, which takes everyone through the Russian Revolution from its beginning, sort of in 1914, to up through its conclusion, you know, later on in 1920 or so on. And there's a particular section that's broken out in a separate book called Lenin in Zurich. Lenin is a fascinating character, and Solzhenitsyn really captures him. He was sort of a madman. He liked Marx. He had no, you know, he never really worked productively. He always worked at his rabble rousing. That's what he did. He was always dependent on relatives to pay his way, to take care of him. He was one of those types. And but he had a rabid desire for power, and he knew how to manipulate people. And primarily how he manipulated people was, again, by intimidating them and by lying to them. And what he would do is he would form partnerships with people for a short time, and then when he had no use for them, he'd stick a knife in their back, and off, you know, that was the end of that. He'd just move on to the next person. That's the kind of individual he was. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. The left is full of people like that. It's just there's Lenins everywhere you look. I think Kamala Harris is a Lenin, you know. I don't know. I think Joe Biden was more of just a not so smart crook, but I hope I don't get you banned off radio for this. But the
No.
but Kamala comes from the Leninist side of the whole thing, and And Republicans just don't think, and conservatives or even libertarians, they just don't think that way. And so we are constantly losing ground. I don't want to be hopeless here, because big things do happen and things do turn around, but it's almost hopeless that we never mount an effective opposition. Let me give you one tiny little example. We have there this Trump assassination thing, which we started off our conversation, right? We know there's something radically wrong with this whole thing. It needs intensive investigation. And we're not going to get anything close to the truth from that sneering Chris Wray and his FBI. That's not going to happen. The only place it's going to happen is by the House of Representatives, which has a small Republican majority, doing really, truly in-depth investigation, and doing it quickly and hardly, okay? By hardly, I don't mean not at all, but by doing it in an intensive way. And so what do? They're taking a week off to go out and campaign. That's what they're doing.
Wow.
And I'm a Republican
Oh.
state. I'm a Republican state committeeman in Pennsylvania. Okay, I represent our county as the male committeeman. I am so disgusted. These people, every single one of them should be primaried. I don't care how much I like them or not. Every single one of them should be primaried, because this is absolutely terrible, and it shows the lack of we don't even grasp the importance of fighting back. We don't even grasp it. I mean, there's a few people doing a decent job, Jim Jordan and Comer and a few others. But even them, they're not asking all the right questions. A few are. Marjorie Taylor Greene is pretty tough. Lauren Boebert, despite her personal flaws, is pretty tough. And there are a few others. The bottom line is they're going to take a week off to campaign in the middle of this. I mean, we should fire them all, every single one of them. It's outrageous. But it shows you the problem between left and right. The left never takes off. Never, ever, ever. The left fights every day, 24 hours a day, never gives up, never apologizes. It is relentless. The left is relentless. We are the exact opposite. And that's the fundamental problem we have. And that's why Western civilization is dying. We're becoming a pagan society, so.
The way you're talking about knife in the back, disposing when they're done, it reminds me of okay, is it a narcissist or a sociopath? Which one am I dealing with today here? Okay, and as you're talking about some of the politics, and I was thinking, okay, well that's true, and a lot of people out there might be saying, well, the right does that too, and
They don't.
I'd like to just explain what I interpreted by what you were talking about, because you started the whole thing by saying she's a communist. Okay. And here's the way a communist will bully you, because remember, a bully is not somebody who's direct with their language. It isn't somebody that goes and kicks sand in your face. It's somebody who figures out a way to get what they want, and you are left emotionally and physically scarred. Okay. And it
There it
doesn't
is.
matter if they do it passive aggressively or they do it as kicking sand in your face. People know when they're bullied. And the way Karl Marx did it, and this is what a lot of people in America don't know, and it's always made me just fascinated that I had to go and find this information out myself. So, Karl Marx, what he would do is he would send people over to work in the American factories. And so here we have these hardworking Americans that are trying to make 10 widgets an hour and maybe even 15 widgets an hour if they work hard and they can make more money and there's a bonus involved. Well, a Marx person will make six, and they'll get the other people to do eight, and they'll constantly get you to work less and work less and work less. They're always crab bucketing you. Put a bunch of crabs in a bucket, one tries to climb out, they'll all pull you down. And so to me, that's how I look at their bully tactics, is they use it in a passive aggressive way that really holds us back individually, holds us back as a society. Whereas a lot of the Republicans, they really believe capitalism and the free market gets healthy competition, which advances you individually, you personally. You can go and you're the one that wants to go train every day to go beat Apollo Creed. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to be some robot helping you like the, in Rocky IV with the Russian. I just put that together right now. But anyway, yeah. So that's I wanted to explain, because a lot of kids today, they have no idea what communism is. To them, it's just a funny word that old people say.
That's right. That's exactly you right. Know? They got to read Lenin and Zurich. If you read Lenin, more than any other communist, I think, or you know, more than Marx, more than Stalin, any of them, Lenin was the pure nihilist or nihilist. I never understood how you're supposed to pronounce that, but he was pure in that sense, and he hated virtually everybody in his life and everybody in the world. He was a very hateful, negative, depressing guy, but yet he was full of energy. Just so, you know, not to make anything productive or to earn a living, but to tear down everything. That's what he had great energy for, tearing everything down. And that's what we're dealing with today. And I don't know, that's why I've increasingly become a fan of Trump's. In 2016, when he ran, I was not, I became a believer in him in the general election, but the way he went after Ted Cruz, who was my candidate, and some of the things he said and did, and the crudeness and all that. But I came to realize Ted could have never, as good as Ted is, and he's very good, very smart debater, he could not have combated the forces that we're dealing with today. He could not have, because he would have tried to defeat them intellectually. And that's not what's called for here. That's not going to do it. We have to defeat them with everything we've got, and only a guy like Trump can do that. And I don't know if he can do it. I don't know if he's going to win. You know, I certainly hope so, or I think our world is over. But the those people who complain about his tweets and his smart remarks and his attacks on Biden, even though Biden's already resigned from the campaign, or an attacks on Kamala. There's plenty of people who are turned off by that, but yet that has to be done. That's the only way that you can get the point across. You won't get it across with intellectual discussion. You will not. It's impossible. You will only get it across by attacking them and going after them and standing up to them and fighting back, which ironically the assassination attempt provided that angle too. But Trump's the only guy. I don't know anybody else. Maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene, but she's not, she's just a congressman woman at this point. But there are very few people with that capability, that self-confidence. You know, some people would say, well, it's arrogance, it's ego, it's this, it's that. But the reality is it's self-confidence. He's a guy who's faced adversity, never backed down. If you know anything about his family, and I do, he's a very caring person. You know, the public image is not necessarily the real Trump. But he has to do that. If he doesn't come after Kamala with everything he's got, she's going to win. She's going to win. And because our party as a whole has no idea how to fight back. None, no clue whatsoever.
I still think it's going to be a repeat of 84. You're going to see it, and I don't even know if she's going to win Minnesota.
I mean, it's going to be. I so hope to God you're right.
I mean, I thought, after that assassination attempt, he holds that fist up, like, gangster style, fight.
Oh,
fight,
God,
fight.
That was so great.
Are you kidding me? He just got every woman on the fence and every youth in America going, yeah, man, where's the middle finger, man? I mean, they were just loving it.
I mean, oh, God.
Oh, my favorite meme I've ever seen is Trump versus Bullet, Biden versus Stairs. I'll send it to you. It's got Biden falling down the stairs and Trump taking a bullet. I mean,
oh, just, that's great. I love it.
My buddy in the media, he said it to me. And I sent it to him, and he just responded back. He goes, this meme wins him the election.
Yeah. And I tell you, one of the ways you have to fight back, by the way, is the Republicans aren't doing enough of is I find, with again with a few exceptions, this whole transgender thing, which is perfect insanity. And we have an issue that I think 90% of the country agrees on, that boys shouldn't be allowed to pretend to be girls and destroy women's sports. All right, so I think there's great agreement on that. And
To
yet,
me, you know my theory on that, by the way,
go
is
ahead.
well, and I'll let everybody know that I've done some different studies in the past and everything, and there's a many Native American tribes, they believe there's five genders. There's a man, a man woman, something they don't know what it is, and then there's a woman man and a woman woman. And the women that were more masculine would actually go out and hunt with the hunters. And it worked out very nice because they were not all masculine, so they could actually do day camp and
Right.
handle themselves out and everything, and vice versa. That
Right.
back at the camp, the men, they were more in tune to the gardening, but they could actually lift things because they actually had testosterone.
Pretty
And
fascinating.
then the ones that they didn't really could figure out, the Richard Simmons, if you will, they
You're
would,
right.
kind of, God
Yeah.
bless his soul, but they would, they'd find something in the tribe for them to do. And so
Right.
they were able to navigate those different identity crises by just establishing basically five genders based on two. And when I heard that, I went, that actually kind of makes sense. And
It
so
does.
I,
It does. Yeah.
yeah. And then the way I saw America do it, all I could think of is that, okay, part of what they try to do to control you is tear you down.
Yeah,
And
that's
as a
right.
society, if they can get you not even to agree on what a man or a woman is, boy, they
Yeah.
got you good. They got you good.
No
And that's
question.
my takeaway, actually, is that's the whole agenda. And the sports is a distraction. Everything else is a distraction. It's just
Right.
make them fight over what a gender is, and we can build it back up however we want.
That's probably there's a lot of truth in that,
Yeah.
but I do think it's a powerful issue. And my point is that Republicans, by and large, don't use it. They're afraid to. They're afraid to be called an anti this or anti that. And so
You're right. You're
they
right.
do not go after. They don't have the courage. A guy like Trump does, but most of them do not. And I heard an interesting quote, which kind of ties into the energy thing here. The other day, and it was about, I think it was from a oil and gas worker who was out of a job at the moment, and he says, "You know what I want? I want a president who's not trying to and a party." He was a Democrat and saying, "I want a president and a party that actually cares more about me getting a job than about protecting somebody who wants a boy who wants to be a girl, you know." And he's absolutely right. I mean, it's just ridiculous that people are focusing on this. And I think you nailed it as to why, because it's a divisive issue and it draws people apart and it makes us attack one another. When most of us agree,
It even appeals to me, who grew up as a Gen X or smart ass, because
yeah.
how is it nobody has said on Jay Leno or whatever the Jay Leno show is now that, do you guys realize the same people who can't tell you what a woman is now telling you have to vote for a woman?
Yes, right. That's right. That's right. That's
You
right.
can't make that shit up.
Well,
I
that's again,
gotta.
that's very Leninist. And
It is.
that's what Lenin did so well, is he never worried about what he said yesterday. It was only about what he said today. He didn't care about consistency. He didn't care about hypocrisy. He didn't care about any of that. All that mattered was, what message do I need to articulate at this moment to manipulate that person? That's it.
Man,
That's it.
that's like about as evil as it gets.
It is, but that's who Lenin was, and that's who the left is. Notice how they've changed positions on so many things in just a few years. I mean, you made a great one right there, but look at the whole democracy thing. Yeah, we're got to protect democracy, but by God, we're going to kick out that old man because he's going to lose the election for us, and we're going to replace him with somebody we choose in the back room. I mean, it's that kind of thing. So, and it's over and over. Look how they changed their position on immigration, illegal immigration. The Chuck Schumer, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton especially used to be very, very hard-nosed on illegal immigration, but then they saw the possibility that it could mean more votes for them, they flipped on a dime. We could go on. We could talk for an hour on that, on things that where they've changed their position. There's no consistency whatsoever, and they don't care. That's why it's pointless to accuse the other side of hypocrisy, because generally they view an accusation of hypocrisy as a validation that they're special and above the law, okay, and above the rules. So, you know, you're wasting your time when you talk about, even, and we all do it, but you're wasting your time when you're talking about someone's hypocrisy. It's just a badge of honor for them. That's all.
And I like to interpret that as an abuse of public trust. So if you voters are out there wondering what a flip-flopper is, they used to be called an abuser of public trust. So
there you go. I love that.
It's what it is. What's going on in Pennsylvania these days? You're up in the county that, or next door, or you're actually, are you in Susquehanna or across the
next door to Susquehanna?
Next door. So natural gas, what's happening there?
Well, we continue to produce. There's been some reduction in emphasis, I guess, because some of the companies that are big in the region have decided to emphasize some of their Texas assets a little bit more than their northeastern Pennsylvania assets. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is some of those Texas assets are oil, which is doing better than gas at the moment. And also, in Texas, they're closer to all the LNG ports for natural gas. So there's good reasons to for the industry to kind of emphasize Texas now rather than Pennsylvania. But I believe the industry still has a great future in Pennsylvania. And prices, you know, the solution to low prices is low prices. It makes people use more gas. So, and I think the AI thing, and we could, probably shouldn't go down that rabbit hole, but the whole, one thing we do know about AI is that it's going to generate massive energy needs. And so there's going to be tremendous demand for natural gas from everywhere, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll have to do another show on that AI, because that is and cryptocurrency and the whole digital world. You're right. That's not a conversation that's anybody's having, because there's not a town in America that has a data center that hasn't had a problem from the noise to the power grid to the local officials all of a sudden now sounding the alarms. And That test market has taken a weird turn. What's going on your website? We'll make sure we plug. You got some stories. I saw that the old Jason Spies made the website. Right. All right. Hey, what else you got on there?
Yeah, by the way, I just want to pass along to you. I had one comment from my reader, because in your article, you mentioned that EVs were generally lighter than internal combustion.
Oh, I changed that. I thought I edited that out, because that was I changed that. Did that go back to the syncing? Okay, I'll go back and check, because
Let me know what you, because I went ahead and edited some myself. I just said, well, some of the smaller EVs in the city probably are lighter, which I think is true.
Where did I? No, I saw that. And I don't know where I even got that from. In fact, I went and I changed it. I wonder if I changed it on a different site. Thank you for telling me that, because I either changed it on ESGU or on the Crude Life, or I've had this problem twice with Substack this week.
Yeah.
It's not synced up. Like when I make changes, it goes to like some weird thing where I'm copy and pasting stuff.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, anyway. I did, because I remember copy and pasting that paragraph, and I went and I changed it, because I went, no, it's not lighter. But I liked the rest of the paragraph. Basically.
I know. Well, I went ahead and edited it. I said, look, some of them are lighter, but a substantial number of them are much heavier. So I just did that.
And I even added a graphic to
it. Oh, good.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's how much I changed it, because I was so upset that. I hit publisher when I always go back and I reread them, right? And I'm like, well, this isn't the same article. And so I went back, and anyway, but thanks for letting me know on that. But getting back to your stuff, what do you got on there?
I've had tremendous success with Substack. It's really brought me a lot more views and visits than I ever imagined possible. One of the things I put up this morning, I did a little research. I love the site called Jo Nova, which is Joanne Nova, who is from Australia, and her site is just called Jo Nova, one word. It's a must read for me every single day. And she always has interesting stuff about the whole green energy, oil and gas, the whole thing. And she had a post this morning that talked about the fact that if Australia gets any more free renewable energy, it won't be able to afford anything anymore because renewables really make electricity much more expensive, and they do. So she had a couple of tables or charts, which I thought were nice, and I put them in my report. And then I did my own research, which I love to do. I went into the EIA site, Energy Information Agency Administration, went to their electricity data browser, and found the growth and generation of non-hydro renewables in California, which I figured, well, California is the, they're the trendsetter, right? So they're way ahead in all this nonsense. So I looked at the non-hydro renewable generation, and then I looked at the cents per kilowatt hour for residential electricity price. And it's amazing when you graph it, you can see that shortly after the renewables thing really took off in California, which was roughly about 2009, 2010, and it's escalated since then. Just a couple of years after, a few years after that, you can see that the electricity price took a big jump, and the reason is obvious. You can add some of that free energy, so to speak, which is not free at all. You can add it into the system without having too much impact to start with, but once it gets rolling, then you've got to recognize the reality that the wind doesn't blow all the time and the sun doesn't shine at night, et cetera, et cetera. And battery storage is only going to get you so far. So you have to have baseload backup, baseload energy, which is either coal, nuclear, or natural gas for the most part. Okay. Hydro in some states, including California, plays a role, but it's really the, like I said, coal, nuclear, and natural gas, and a little bit of oil, right? So those are the things you have to have as backup when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. But the problem is when you're taking that business away from those baseloads, you're making them less efficient. So they after a couple of years, they go out of business because they're no longer profitable. So then the price goes way up because you got to depend on peaker plants or that kind of thing, or something new that's more expensive. And so invariably, renewables always raise the cost of all energy. Okay. And Joanne Nova's post showed it's happening in Australia. My little post shows it's happening in California, that the renewables are raising the price of electricity. Notwithstanding that correlation does not always equal causation, but I think we can see how it works together in this case. I've also got a post there about Pennsylvania, written by a former congressman, about how the Green New Deal is not necessarily good for politics in Pennsylvania. I have a post on EVs that have been getting a free ride, but in fact, what's happening is that as you pointed out, and this is really your post, is the one where because there's associated costs on highways from these EVs, the communities out there, the states out there, I should say, are not going to let this go on for long, and many of them have already started charging EVs in one way or another, and so that's going to end. And then we talk about the I talk about the another piece of legislation in Congress, supported by Republicans, no less, so disgusting, that will essentially impose new costs on energy and end up being a debacle, just like every other federal initiative is. So those are some of the things that are up there right now. And we have a nice little video from Range Resources about the fact that if you want to electrify more things, you better plan on building more gas plants. So, in so many words.
What's the website again?
My website is Energy energysecurityfreedomsubstack.com. Energy security freedom substack. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the time today, man.
Hey, it's, you know, we always get carried away, don't we? It's great, though. I love it. So thank you very much.